From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, June 13th, 2025. The Maine House deadlocked Friday on a bill to ban transgender athletes from girls' and women's sports teams. As Kevin Miller reports, the tie vote means that the debate is far from over in the Maine legislature.
Majority Democrats narrowly rejected several Republican-sponsored bills dealing with transgender rights during more than 2 hours of emotional debate. But the chamber split 72-72 on a bill that would ban transgender athletes in female sports by requiring schools to designate teams as all-female, all-male, or co-ed. The bill from Representative Liz Caruso, a Carrotunk Republican, would also require that schools offer only single-sex locker rooms and restrooms.
Passage of 868 ensures that Maine students, including those who are transitioning, are protected and accommodated, and that fairness, opportunities, privacy, and safety are preserved for all athletes on and off the field.
But opponents of Caruso's measure and other bills said they would violate Maine's law protecting individuals from discrimination based on their gender identity. They also said such bills further alienate a vulnerable population of young people. Caruso's bill was, quote, tabled after the tie vote, meaning it can be brought up again later Friday or in the coming days. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
The Maine Superior Court Friday rejected an appeal of language in a referendum question that would require people to present photo identification when voting. Secretary of State Shenna Bellows drafted language for the ballot question in March. In May, opponents filed their appeal, arguing it's not understandable to the average voter and fails to accurately lay out the 20-plus proposed changes it would make to Maine's election laws. The court ruled the ballot referendum, as written, is understandable and not misleading, and denied the petitioner's appeal. Maine lawmakers have passed new protections for mobile home park residents into law, including one that would give them right of refusal to purchase the parks if they go up for sale. Nicole Ogrisco reports.
One bill would give resident cooperatives the right to buy if they can match or exceed the seller's price of their mobile home park. Another measure would require certain corporate buyers to pay a transfer fee for each mobile home lot purchased through a park sale. The collected fees would go toward a statewide fund that would help mobile home residents finance the purchase of their communities. Housing advocates have said the bills will support Maine resident cooperatives in purchasing their parks and prevent large out-of-state real estate investors from coming into Maine. Despite efforts from Democrats, neither bill received a required two-thirds majority vote to become law immediately. Governor Janet Mills has 10 days to sign both bills, veto them, or allow them to become law without her signature. A third bill that would place a moratorium on certain mobile home park sales still faces further votes in the legislature. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Nicole Ogrisco.
The Maine Public Utilities Commission has approved rate hikes for customers of Central Maine Power. For a typical residential customer, the increase will be nearly $5 per month. PUC Commissioner Patrick Scully says recovery from the storms of the past 2 years is part of what's to blame for rising costs.
Storm costs are the largest driver of the overall distribution rate increase, and we're hopeful that the modest storm impacts to date in 2025 will help moderate the ACF adjustments next year.
Scully also says the ongoing work being done to harden the grid against future damage should also help to mitigate future cost increases due to storms. A federal judge ruled this week that a Venezuelan man was unlawfully arrested by Border Patrol in Calais and detained for 65 days based on a tip from a concerned citizen. Caitlin Badion has more.
U.S. District Court Judge Leo Sorokin in Massachusetts ruled this week that Customs and Border Protection must release Gianfranco Alejandro Flores Salazar from GPS monitoring and agency supervision. Flores Salazar, a Venezuelan citizen, was permitted to enter the country last year while he applied for asylum and was granted a temporary work authorization. He found work with a construction company, which brought him to Maine in March for a job near the Canadian border. A Calais citizen then reported the work crew's van to Customs and Border Protection. Flores Salazar was arrested even though he presented a valid work authorization card. He was eventually transported to Massachusetts, where he filed a petition in federal court. According to court documents, Immigration and Customs Enforcement later attributed his detention to human error, and Customs and Border Protection said it was an administrative oversight. Flores Salazar was released from custody in May, but he was still fitted with a GPS monitor and subject to strict agency supervision. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Caitlin Badayan.
The Trump administration announced plans to eliminate rules that require power plants to curb greenhouse gas emissions, as well as airborne pollutants such as mercury. As Molly Anking reports, public health advocates say Maine's air quality could be affected by sources upwind.
Under the planned rule change, existing coal plants and new gas-fired power plants will have no greenhouse gas limits. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Lee Zeldin says ending the regulations won't raise emissions and that the existing rules had been, quote, suffocating the economy. But the American Lung Association's Liz Scott says the emissions will increase and contribute to climate change, which in turn worsens air quality.
We will see people get sick from emissions that could have been prevented. And as we all know, air moves. And so the air quality impact could be very far-reaching.
Far-reaching to places like Maine, which is a downwind state, this means prevailing winds will blow pollution from power plants out west, for example, up to Maine. The new rules are not yet finalized, and they're likely to be challenged in court. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
The U.S. Senate will now take up the rescission package approved by the U.S. House Thursday that claws back $9.4 billion in funding for public broadcasting and foreign aid programs. Independent Senator Angus King said he opposes the package and will work to preserve funding that was already appropriated by Congress.
The reality is it's going to take four members of the Republican caucus to say this isn't the way to go. To now say, never mind, we're not going to fund these programs is, I believe, a dereliction of the responsibility of the Congress.
King said all of the actions are being taken by Republicans with no negotiation on a bipartisan level. Republican Senator Susan Collins told reporters Thursday that she does not support cuts to the public health programs in the rescission package, but she has not taken an official position on the public broadcasting funds. New Brunswick's Campo Bello Island, just over the bridge from Lubeck, is home to a park that honors binational friendship. Created through an international treaty, the Roosevelt Campo Bello International Park preserves the former summer cottage of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt as a living memorial to the historically close ties and mutual respect between the U.S. and Canada. That spirit is embodied in a community where many have family on both sides of the border. But as President Trump steers the U.S.-Canada relationship into frosty, uncharted waters, some islanders say they're feeling suddenly adrift. Ari Snyder reports.
Growing up on Campobello, librarian Stephanie Goff says she'd cross the bridge into Lubeck, Maine, sometimes four or five times a day, to go shopping and see friends. But now, like many Canadians, she's deliberately avoiding the U.S. as much as possible, in protest of President Trump's tariffs and repeated comments about making Canada the 51st state.
We don't take it lightly that the president of the most powerful nation in the world jokes or not jokes, who knows, about, you know, invading our country. Like, that's not cool.
But Goff, a dual citizen, says it's hard to avoid the U.S. entirely, because the island has no gas stations, one small grocery store, and only seasonal ferry service to Canada.
We are vulnerable here because we have no way most of the year on and off the island unless we travel through the United States.
The Canadian government has carved out a special limited tariff exemption for the island's 900 or so year-round residents to bring household goods back from the U.S. And so far, the most recent data from the Eastport Port of Entry, which includes Lubeck, shows monthly border crossings holding steady.
Well, those are zucchinis. That's a pepper.
For Campobello resident Dale Calder, restrictions on bringing plants across the border means he has to wait until the seasonal car ferry starts running to pick up seedlings for his garden, a lifelong hobby.
My first thing I remember growing is taking my mother's dried beans that she had for baked beans, and I planted them. Yeah, she wasn't happy, but they grew.
Now, he says, the political uncertainty has fueled a new sense of urgency to establish year-round ferry service to Canada.
Some people who
were either silent or opposed or whatever prior to all this happening, or come around saying, boy, it would be nice to be able to get to our own country.
Calder is a lifelong Campobello resident and a dual citizen by birth because the nearest hospital just happened to be across the water in Eastport. He made a career working at the island's small border checkpoint and says the confrontational stance of the Trump administration marks an entirely new chapter in the island's history.
We're just so astonished at what has happened since January until now. How bad can it get?
The political tremors rattling U.S.-Canada relations at a federal level are also destabilizing a foundational story of Campobello's identity.
So we're at the rear of the main Roosevelt cottage.
John Southern is superintendent of the Roosevelt Campobello International Park, home to FDR's stately summer home overlooking the channel to Eastport.
If this was in the time of FDR and Eleanor, you would have seen well over 100 sailing vessels, trading ships, all going back and forth freely.
FDR put good relations with Canada at the center of his presidency, once calling the shared border, quote, the noblest monument to peace and to neighborly economic and social friendship in all the world. Southern says it was First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt's idea to preserve the summer home as an international park, jointly funded, staffed, and administered by the two countries.
That this could be not only a memorial to FDR, but also a symbol of the friendship, unity, and mutual respect between the two nations.
But while the park pays homage to a former president, it is subject to the policies of the current one. And this year, Southern says the U.S. has so far released less than half of its share of the funding, leaving the park with a roughly $1 million shortfall and no clear guidance from agencies on the American side. That's forced the park to leave about 20 positions unfilled. But Southern says he believes the park and its message can help to light a path beyond this low point in U.S.-Canada relations.
To show that as people, we're stronger than that, we're stronger than political divide, we're stronger than borders.
And in fact, some islanders say they're not losing sleep over international relations.
Oh, what a beautiful day. Can we sit?
You can totally sit.
Because I don't get to sit often.
On a recent morning, Diana Parker takes a break from working the griddle at her restaurant, the porch at Friars Bay Inn and Cottages.
I don't feel any different with U.S. than I have for 30 years.
Parker says she does hear more customers talking about tariffs. Parker also serves in the municipal government, but as a service industry veteran on an island buffeted by the political currents of two countries, she says at the restaurant, her job is to play it straight.
In my opinion, nobody needs to know what your political views are when you work in customer service, especially in a restaurant in a border town.
For other islanders, though, the rift is too big to ignore.
Can you go and help Stephen for a second?
Mm-hmm.
He needs a computer.
Just down the road, librarian Stephanie Goff is helping volunteers set up for a presentation on a new nature trail. She says she's canceled an annual camping trip to Maine to avoid spending money in the U.S., opting instead to visit Grand Manan or somewhere else in Canada. Still, here at the far end of the longest international border on Earth, Goff is holding out hope that the ties that bind across the water will endure.
We're more than just neighbors. We're blood. The sooner we get back to that, the better.
For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join us for Weekend Edition starting at 8 a.m. tomorrow. I'm Carol Bousquet. Thanks for listening.